Right now it is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal, and we'll see who we have on the line here. Cynthia, you're there, I know.
I'm glad I'm number one.
All right. Janet, are you there?
Uh-huh.
All right.
See, not so bad. You're
well,
great.
It's been a hell of a morning.
Really? I'm sorry.
Normally when you have a computer problem, it's just one thing and you can focus down on it pretty quick. Yeah. When a couple of different things though go haywire, then you're always
and it looks
suspect.
Like it's okay.
Yeah.
That's the really sort and of your mind
suspect.
Just kind of.
All right. Well, let us go to the pages of the Lakeville Journal, and it's funny. I started getting calls this morning. The meeting last night in Falls Village was continued to October 1st.
The public hearing on affordable.
Yeah. So let's just get that out of the way right now.
Yeah.
That's continued to October
the 1st. Complicated.
It's complicated,
and everybody's bringing in lots of detailed concerns about it.
Yeah, so we'll get that out of the way. Now we'll go to the front page. And something I found out about in my mail to me 2 weeks ago, but then, of course, we talked about it on the air because there's been another security breach that hit New Vance Health. I think this is the third one in about 2 years, where their Blackbaud data security breach, no financial information, but just about everything else.
Which is ironic because, as I understand it, and I don't deeply understand it, but my understanding was that Blackbaud is financial nonprofit fundraising software. So it was interesting when they kept saying, like, donor information, and they were like, the donor information is fine, but the blood donor information has possibly been shared out. So it's hard to figure out what people are looking for when they do these, when these breaches occur. But they're watching the dark web and saying, as far as they can tell, none of this information is being used, which, I mean, I just feel like they must be using something. Like, why else would they go to all that trouble?
Well, I think it's one of the reasons we have our own private server here. All our information is on our own private server because we were once on one of these shared servers with these big companies, and we were hacked. And we were hacked just
Marshall
because
Marshall came in and talked about the thing, and there's a joker sitting on all the screens.
But we would have never been hacked had we not been part of the major server. And ever since we went to our own server, which is more expensive because every 6 or 7 months you have to add on more space to it and everything. But ever since we've gone to our own server, we haven't been hacked once. So
yeah.
I think
when you're that small,
they're not just hitting hospitals.
No.
And they're not just hitting people in New England. Like, my college in Southern California emailed me almost the same day that we heard about the Sharon Hospital. And so the breach happened over the summer, and New Vance didn't send out a warning to customers until, last week. But they're not the only ones.
No,
and
no.
As they explained it, you know, they wanted to do their own in-depth investigation, which, you know, is to their credit.
And more and more, the big servers, I think it's basically I'll use the term anarchist, but people who don't like big business, big servers, big companies, and so when they hack them, they realize that at the same time they hack thousands of other people that are using those
it's
servers.
Sort of sorry about their luck because they're going after someone else. But that is one of the problems with being, you know, in with the big guys.
But the irony is, of course, that this is software that's specifically used by nonprofits.
I know.
So if you're like, we hate the big guys, then don't hurt the little guys.
Except there's so many different nonprofits.
Yeah,
there's big nonprofits.
It's crazy. Well, I want to go over to the other story that you did, Cynthia. We talked about this with Maria Horn. She right away did a memorial to, of course, Justice
Ginsburg.
And you've got a nice story about the memorials that came up right after her death.
And, you know, it's not a race. And obviously people who are at higher levels of government have more steps that they have to go through, but I was impressed that Maria really just got right out with this email and said, I'm going to be out in the green at sunrise, and if anybody'd like to join me, I'd love to see you. And it was a very casual, very not showboaty event. Really was about Maria and her respect for a justice who had, as she said, spanned her career in the law. And Maria just stood there sort of leaning on the sign for the lobster sale and the farmer's market, and just casually talked about how meaningful it was to her and was very moved, and as were, you know, all the people who were there remembering Justice Ginsburg. A box of Kleenex out on the grass in the green but wasn't touched. People were just kind of quietly sniffling into their masks. But a very moving ceremony. But we also have some of the statements from our top state leaders, all of which I thought were very, were just great, just the way that you would want them to respond. So that's a nice little collection of things they said.
And, you know, that includes our representative who, by the way, became infected with COVID and is dealing with that on all her other plates besides running for re-election and being a congressperson to get COVID-19. And she opened up and basically said to people, you know, we're not tested like you think we are in Congress. It's not what you think it is.
It's incredible that more people haven't got it, really.
Yeah, it's really amazing.
Well,
really
they might have not, you know, been tested. She had to go to three places before she got the test.
Well, that's the whole thing. That should make people, you know, their Congress people are normal people. And unfortunately, unlike a lot of pro athletes and people, they don't get automatic tests. They don't get the green light to go first. You know, it's catch as catch can, like everybody else is doing.
My understanding is that the flu shots for the season are now available, and everybody's being encouraged to go out and get their flu shot so that you create some immunity in your system that could help protect you from COVID-19.
All right. Story on the bottom of the homepage. So far, so good. Regional high school returns during the pandemic. Cure, it's fine. There have been problems in Torrington and other places around the state and also in New York State. But school districts seem to be adapting even when they get a COVID infection that pops up. Things actually seem to be going quite well for how disastrous they could have gone.
I know, and since I'm always a person that looks for the worst possible outcome, I actually keep thinking, like, wow, we're doing pretty good, and we are. And we had one case that was reported early on in a staff member at Cornwall Consolidated School, and everybody jumped quickly to eliminate any danger of contamination there. And really, as far as we've heard, there are no cases in the area. New cases, and Ian Strever, the principal of Housatonic Valley Regional High School, explains the incredibly complex scheduling is already hard enough. Like anybody who's ever tried to look at a scheduling chart knows, it's really, really difficult, and they're doing it now in these pods. And so Ian is describing the different cohorts and the different days that they're there and the different ways that they're making it possible for people to come in and get special help. And I have to say, any teacher, any administrator who's trying to do this deserves a mini Nobel Prize. It's so complex. And, you know, thanks to them for doing all this extra work.
All right. And a couple stories out of Falls Village. Bridges, ballots, and internet, and also who should study town needs for housing.
So that relates back to the affordable housing concerns. So there is a group that wants to build affordable housing, rental residences here on River Road in Falls Village. And there's a lot of concern about it, not just from neighbors, but really from other people in town. And some, you know, As is always the case here in the northwest corner, both sides have things of interest they want to say. The concern with this affordable housing study is there's some concern around among a few people that the percentage or the rate of affordable housing is being miscounted, and that that is why there's this pushback on what should be a fairly straightforward study being done by our regional COG. And then just catching up with business in Falls Village, Henry Todd talking about the additional money that's being requested for the election. And, of course, we did have a story in our September 17th issue about state and federal funds that are coming to our town halls. And you should be getting your application for the absentee ballot, so keep an eye out for that in your mailbox. And I just want to quickly jump back to A2 because we get the most unexpected last-minute obituary on Tuesday morning for a young woman from Ashley Falls named Gabriella Shook, who has connections here in the Falls Village area. And she died in an automobile accident at a young age, and we haven't been able to find out any additional information. And usually it's pretty noted when somebody dies in tragic circumstances like that. So we've been in touch with our contacts up in Massachusetts and talking about this. We've checked the police. So I don't know if anybody knows exactly what happened here, but our definitely condolences go out to the family. And, you know, just what a tragedy.
All right. Now, you've got a story, and I have been bombarded over the past 3 days. Kent and now Salisbury. Salisbury has, I think, almost 27 HIV.
Kent.
And people from both towns want to know. One person said, I'm trying to scare people. And all I say was, I'm just passing along numbers that come from the state of Connecticut.
And the numbers are going up. There's no question.
Yeah, the numbers are going up slowly in the state of Connecticut. And Salisbury and Kent more recently are now the highest two towns that have reported infections of COVID-19.
And, of course, the underlying concern that people have is they're convinced that COVID is coming in with the students from the boarding schools, and of course these are the towns with the big boarding schools in them. And I can only speak for what we're seeing here at the Hotchkiss School and the Salisbury School. Those campuses are shut tight, and nobody's allowed out. So it's not like in the old days when you would have kids from Kent wandering through the streets and going to get, you know, coffee and stuff. Even the pizza delivery, because they have, you know, a lot of kids from the private schools order delivery food at night while they're studying. It seems that what I seem to have seen at the Hotchkiss School is they've got a special tent in the parking lot, and if you've ordered food, you have to go to that tent so you don't have delivery people going in and out of these dormitories and potentially picking up infections. So it seems like everything's buttoned up pretty tight, and one of our old neighbors in Lakeville from the Lakeville Journal office has been in contact with different state authorities, and it's like when we were having COVID-infected cases coming to Sharon Healthcare Center and Sharon Hospital, the numbers for people who are infected are not supposed to be getting reported in the town where they're occurring or where they're tested. They're supposed to report back to their hometown. So when you see a rise in COVID cases in Salisbury and Kent, it is not supposed to reflect numbers at the boarding schools. They're supposed to be in the community.
It's the notice of legal residence when they check your legal residence, whatever your legal residence is, that's the town that's reported. There's been people in Falls Village that said this, the state's wrong, that a person died in Falls. No, that person died in the town of North Canaan. And it's not Falls Village, and people thought that they lived in Falls Village. I mean,
there is always complexity in the way that the state
reports.
They have to protect the privacy of the people that get it, so they could just release very general statistics, and those statistics could be anywhere from 12 to 24 hours old by the time.
Sometimes a week, the way that they're collecting them. But also, Gene Speck, the first selectman from Kent, was very careful to say there are 5 new cases. They are in 3 households. She did not say, you know, we can't say where they're occurring or they're. She said specifically they are in residences in the town of Kent. But if anybody is concerned, our governor is doing a phenomenal job of keeping statistics and charts and studies on ct.gov. Go to the portal, and you can see the map with all the towns. You can see the numbers on it, and a lot of your. I think if people actually want to be informed and not just spread rumors or be anxious, it's a very good place to go.
Yeah, it literally takes a minute and a half to get there, and they release the information in Connecticut 4 o'clock every day except for Saturday and Sunday. New York State, it's released at 9 o'clock that morning, Monday through Friday, and Columbia County, it's released at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Monday through Friday as well, and in Massachusetts, it's released at the end of each day. Once again, going to the Cornwall Bridge aesthetics.
This is the funniest story you have to read. Like, no matter who you are, if you've ever sat in a meeting where they were talking about bridges and you get into one of these, or any kind of street furniture, there's always a very strong contingent of people that are concerned about the safety of whatever it is that's being built, a bridge in this case, and another equally concerned group that's very concerned about the aesthetics of it. And that's what's happening right now on a fairly obscure road in Cornwall called the Cogswell Bridge Road. And a beautiful little area back there. I wouldn't say it's super heavily trafficked, but it is trafficked. And so the bridge had to be updated, and now a lot of people are coming in and saying, like, we just don't like the way it looks, which you hear. It's not just a Cornwall thing. You hear this in every single town. And Leela actually wrote a very respectful but also dryly humorous story about, you know, what's not normally that entertaining a story, but it's very interesting and an interesting ongoing debate. And when we write our novels about life in the Northwest Corner, this has to be chapter because it happens all the time.
All right, I want to go on to the opinion and viewpoint pages. We'll start off with your editorial, A Loss for the Court and for the Country.
Right. We talk about, of course, the loss of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg and how it has affected all of us, and I found it interesting that those of us who are on social media were suddenly bombarded with so many positive statements instead of the generally toxic discourse that happens on social media. That was encouraging and a wonderful tribute to her. And so we, look at that strangely comforting side of this. It's too bad that social media can't be used for more positive communication more often. But that's how it is. So, and I quote Maria Horn, who had such a direct connection to Justice Ginsburg because of her career in the law. And we also have loads of letters to the editor.
I'm going to stand out here and defend you guys on one of those letters. Story was unnecessary and not newsworthy. First of all, Lakeville Journal, the story that they claim that Lakeville Journal did the story out of the New York Post, the New York police released that story.
That's right.
We have it from the police.
Yeah. And they tweeted it out. I know it's never nice when a story comes out like that and it concerns a local person, but it wasn't taken from the Post, that evil New York paper. This all originated from New York police.
Yeah.
Right.
And it was not our intention to write a big drama and be sensationalist. We felt it was worth mentioning that somebody who had been involved in a local protest had been involved in it in a much less savory protest in a nearby place.
Yeah, so I have to defend. These things are, and Jenny, you can comment. These letters and these stories don't just appear. You don't take a story out of a newspaper and reprint it in your. That doesn't happen.
No, and I did talk to Mr. Fishman, who wrote the letter, and let him know that it was not just the Post that Cynthia drew from, but from the New York Police and from Rolling Stone and other sources. So, still, of course. This letter section is the area where our readers get to express their views, and this is their space, and we are glad to let them have it. And we certainly have enough space to express our views, too, so we welcome that.
Yeah. Another one of the viewpoints, and this is a great viewpoint, whether you believe in real news or fake news or whatever, destroyer of newspapers eyeing America's oldest. This is it's a sign of the times.
It is, and this is Dick Hollis, who writes for us every other week faithfully, and he really lays out exactly what could happen to what we certainly might take for granted in Connecticut, but we shouldn't. We have the oldest continuously published newspaper, 256 years of the Hartford Courant, and Dick is talking about what happens when a place like Alden Global Capital, and hedge funds take over news organizations, and it's not pretty, and it does not help public understanding of what's happening in their society.
And it's not only that. I mean, just remember when Sharon Hospital was owned by a hedge fund.
Yeah.
They don't care about anything but numbers. And that's why even when...
That's why this whole thing with newspapers being bought and so basically... taken over by hedge funds and then being stripped and then being non-existent has been a bit of a problem.
And that's why people should be glad that New Vance formed what they formed, whether you agree with everything they do or not. And they own hospitals because they run hospitals.
really understand their product and care about it. We believe they care about it. But, these hedge funds do not... What they're doing with these newspapers, especially the big old dailies, is buying them for their real estate.
Yeah.
And then divesting themselves of that and dumping the papers.
Right. And it is such a disservice to the communities. It's just, and now these communities are massive. Now they're cities.
Yeah.
So it's pretty diabolical because that leaves you with pretty much a desert. If your only information is coming off social media, you're in trouble.
But, it goes back to when Wall Street started buying companies, tobacco companies and food companies.
And then
doing exactly that. They sell them off. They sell them off for the valuable products, and then they just let everything else go. So newspapers need to be run and owned locally or I'll even say regionally, but it never works when a hedge fund owns it because, you know, sooner or later it's going to be forced out of business.
Yeah, and sooner is more likely the case. We're fortunate in this area that the Berkshire Eagle up in Pittsfield, Massachusetts has been taken over by a local group after having been through a few ownerships that really made it seem as if that area of Massachusetts would not have its own local coverage. But, you know, they're making a go of it, and it's a good model for these smaller-sized or even, you know, larger cities to try to keep some local news and to keep some eye on their government.
It's just imagine if you didn't have any local radio stations or newspapers or magazines, what would happen in government? That's all you could say. It would be unfettered, you know, with no oversight at all.
Right, and there are plenty of people who then say, "Well, who cares about government anyway? They don't do anything, and we don't care what they do." But boy, it affects your life whether you think it does or not.
Then they get a little older, and they suddenly need it, and they go,
wait a minute, what do I do?" Yeah,
wait till we get through the next 2.5 months, and after the election, they'll understand the value of news organizations. I want to go on to Compass. We have about 2.5 minutes left, and you have a pretty big Compass, actually, this week.
There's a lot going on right now, which is very exciting. And we have one of my favorite events of the year is coming up, which is the Clayway, organized by Allison Palmer down in Kent. And this year they have, I think, 15 artists, 9 different studios. Todd Piker, a very beloved local potter, is in it. Anne Haywood, who I'd never seen before. I love her work. I'm going to go see it. You can find descriptions of several of the potters here in the article. You can find links to many of their websites and, of course, information on how to find the map. That's October 17th and 18th, and Allison Palmer Studio is going to be open on the 16th. 3 beloved local artists, illustrators, are going to be doing a show at the Hunt Library. I would say one of the most beloved of all in the area is Robert Andrew Parker, who I think is in his 90s. And if you've never seen his work, it's very much in the style of Ralph Steadman. It's fantastic. He's a world-class artist. People around here love him and collect him, and we're very fortunate that he's still painting and showing and selling. And, of course, Sam Posey, very beloved around here, not only for his history with Lime Rock Park and as a race car driver, but also for his own paintings. He was the inspiration for the show. And Robert Cronin, again, another notable Falls Village painter. Their work is going to be shown at the Hunt Library. It's all female figures. You wouldn't think that people around here would really have that much to care about the Amazon, but a guy named Mark Plotkin has written a book, and if you flip through it, it's a lot of the same environmental concerns that we have here in the northwest corner with migration of different species and the climate, of course, which we're all concerned about. So he'll be giving a talk with the Scoville Library on Zoom. The Rhee Institute in Millerton, always doing something interesting, and it's actually Northeast, which is the larger town that incorporates Millerton on Boston Corners Road. Henry Klimowitz has been inviting artists to come build little little boxes full of statements that they want to make about art, and they're burying them in the ground. They're backlit, and you can go see them at dusk, and everybody who's seen it says it's phenomenal. The Taconic Learning Center, always interesting classes. As long as we're all now going to be hunkering back indoors for the winter, sign up for some classes. Interesting long list, information there on how to find it. And then the Haley Art Center is it's got a show on October 11th. It's getting bigger and bigger. Some of the artists performing are listed in there. I believe that also Bernadette Peters and I think Chris Noth maybe is involved. But, again, information there on how to find it.
And, of course, the only bad thing about Taconic Learning Center this year, they're doing it via Zoom. So that means you don't get cookies at each class.
BYOC.
which they used to do. But
that's okay because you can have a big plate of cookies in front of your computer.
But they are putting on their fall schedule. All right, all this and more.
Tri-Corner Real Estate.
Yeah, I was going to get to that. That's a big section for the the real estate this week. And probably more and more people looking through that real estate section from out of town.
Very active.
All right, next week, of course, you'll be on the air with us. But in the meantime, tricornernews.com and also at your newsstands. Guys, we'll speak to you next week.
Thanks so much.
Thanks. Have a good week.
Thank you.
That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal here on Robinhood Radio. And as I said, you can find them on the web, tricornernews.com, and at newsstands throughout the region, and also home delivery as well.